about it.
Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
It is the Boomer and the Babe Show coming to you on Thursday, December 8th, 2011. We're broadcasting from our studio in the Feeding Arizona complex in Youngtown, Arizona. Feeding Arizona is part and parcel of the Valley View Community Food Bank family. And the Valley View Community Food Bank gives away the food free, one of the only food banks that I'm aware of that gives the food out to the people of need 100% free. This last Thanksgiving, they gave just short of 5,000 boxes of full Thanksgiving dinners, including turkeys, to people that came by and were in need of food. No questions asked. 100% free. It's amazing what Jesse Ramirez, the founder and executive director of Valley View Community Food Bank, manages to do. He does it every year. How he does it, we don't know. It just seems to appear somehow, and it's magical, it's mystical, it's a God thing, and it's just unbelievable the number of people that he can serve out of this little food bank here in Youngtown, Arizona. So if you're of a mind in this holiday season to make a donation to a nonprofit, check out valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. That's valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. Any donations, cash, food, anything is welcome and greatly appreciated. No donation is too small. Help restock the shelves of the food bank after we've had such a tremendous outpouring of goodwill back to the community. We'd like to be able to do a little bit more for the Christmas season as well. This is the Boomer the Babe Show, as I mentioned, brought to you and produced by Boomer the Babe Incorporated. More than just a radio show producer, we also do videos for your websites, and we do mini books, and we do ebooks. Our ebook authors also have their own programs on the Boomer the Babe Network here on Blog Talk. Check them out at the archives, and that's at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. See what they have to say. Always good information and good programming with those folks as well. And we appreciate the fact that you're listening to us today, and hopefully you will hear this archive. And if you're live listening, tell your friends and neighbors that the archives are available 24/7. They go all the way back to day one when we first started doing these shows. My special guest today is a journalist, a radio and television journalist, as well as an author and a speaker. Her name is Beverly Mahone. Beverly has been in this business for some time. She is also a media coach. Never at a loss for words, as most of us in this business. If we were at a loss for words, we probably wouldn't be in this business. But I'd like to welcome to the show Beverly Mahone. Thanks for being on with the Boomer the Babe Show.
Hey, Pete, thank you very much for inviting me. How are you today?
I'm well. I'm very well. Deborah's not here because she is in bed with a cold and bronchitis type thing, and I'm trying to stay my distance. I'm probably about a 20-minute car ride from her, and I think that might be far enough not to get the germ.
Well, I'll just be the babe today. How's that?
You could be the guest babe anytime you like.
I love that. Okay, the guest babe.
Yes, babe. Well, Beverly, if Deborah were here, and I know she wanted to be here today to speak with you, she would ask for your two-minute movie, and by that she would be referring to, how did you get started back before you became Beverly Mahone talking to me today? Where do you hail from? What's your beginnings like? So take a couple of minutes and just tell our listeners where you hail from.
Well, I'm originally from Ohio. I went to Ohio University and got a degree in journalism back in the 70s. And I'll tell you something that I have never shared with anyone anywhere before. I'd always like to give a little nugget that I've never shared with anyone when I do these shows. I got my first journalism bug bite when I was 12 years old.
Really?
I had written a letter to the editor of our local newspaper, the Canton Repository, about race relations. And I don't know, I think it was because they were talking about the Martin Luther King holiday back then, and I think that I just wrote this article or this little letter to say, you know, I think that it would be a good idea and that we should, you know, all be one, you know, kumbaya.
Mm-hmm.
And the letter was printed. And at that moment, all these people were calling my parents. My teachers were so proud of me. They cut it out and they put it on our little board in my classroom. And I even got a letter from one of our congressmen, Congressman Ralph Regula. I am not even sure if he's still alive anymore. But anyway, just congratulating me as a 12-year-old for writing such a poignant letter. And it was at that moment that I knew that writing was going to be in my future and that I was going to do everything I could to make a difference in the lives of others. I honestly believe that at 12 years old. So that's something I've never shared with anyone. You got the story. How's that?
Wow, thank you very much. I'm honored to have gotten that story. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, so my career has taken me a lot of places. I worked in Ohio. I've been in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and working for the NBC affiliate, I had the pleasure of being one of a few journalists in our area to travel to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, during the Haitian refugee crisis. And I also got an opportunity to go to Saudi Arabia during Operation Desert Shield. So that was quite an experience for me as a journalist. Some of the highs of my career. And then I stayed in North Carolina where I am now. And even though I'm not working in the corporate part of radio and television anymore, I'm kind of like independent freelancing, doing my own thing where I have more, I guess, latitude in what I can say versus what I could not say when I was working in the traditional media.
That's interesting you say what you could not say, because it's my personal belief that there's a lot of things that the media does not say, and not that they're being overtly biased in any particular area, but that they're being biased by process of elimination. In other words, they're not giving us everything that they may know about a topic. Do you find that to be the case?
I definitely find that to be the case, because here's the deal, Pete. When you're sitting in an editorial meeting and you've got all these facts, or what you believe are facts, coming at you, and you have a minute and a half to tell the story, because that's really all you get is a minute and a half to tell a story, you have to decide what do you think is the most important. Now, if you and I sat down in a newsroom and with the same story, I would bet you that you and I would come up with different facts based on everything that is before us. Why? Because our subjectivity kicks in. You know, they try to tell us that journalism is objective and, oh, you know, we have to look at it with an objective eye. But I'm here to tell you, Pete, that there is subjectivity in news. If you look at the story and you see that the man was wearing a black hat, and you think that's relevant to the story, and I look at him and I see that he's wearing brown shoes, and I think that's relevant to the story, well, that's your subjective eye. That's my subjective eye. So that's how things get left out of news stories, because we're really looking at them through the prism of our own eyes.
And I think then also when you, because everybody brings their own I'm not going to, well, biases, prejudices, that's the fine words to use, but they bring their own perspective to a story based on what they believe to be true themselves, based on their upbringing, based on where they lived, based on how they've lived. All of that has to have an influence on how they report the particular story. Do you agree with that?
Totally agree, and here's the other thing. The majority of news managers in the newsrooms in this country are men and white men. Now, what does that say to you? And I mean, I'm not here to pick on anybody, but if the stories aren't favorable to women, is it because a man is running the newsroom and may not see that is relevant? If the story, and I know that there's been a lot of criticism in the African-American communities because every time a little black child goes missing, you don't get the kind of Natalie Holloway coverage that you get. And so that's been an issue. So, you know, depending on whose eyes have the final say of the story, that tends to, you know, dictate how it's going to go. And I'm not saying that they don't cover women's stories fairly, but, you know, if a man is running the shop, maybe he doesn't see menopause as a big deal. And if he doesn't know anybody who has menopause, hasn't dealt with the wrath of menopause, then that story is probably not as important as a story about you know, the number of people who are affected by impotence. I'm just using that as an example.
I understand what you're saying. Well, it's interesting you bring up the issue of a black child gone missing, because here in the Arizona market, in Phoenix in particular, there is a case that's ongoing as we speak about a young black child, a little girl, that I believe is about 8, maybe she's 10. I really don't remember the exact age. She's been missing now for months, and she is believed to have been killed. Nobody can find her. Her mother has been put in jail because she has a history of child abuse and a prison stay in San Diego, in Southern California, with her other children. So her other children are now with the CPS, Child Protective Services, which in and of itself is a nightmare. But the fact is that this child, being a minority child, is being covered. And I think that there is a sense of duty to cover it because of some of the attention that's been brought to the fact that there has been unfair, unequal coverage in the news of missing and exploited children. And I think it's about time that they did this. But here's the other side of this story as I see it, as a white guy sitting here in Phoenix. And I'm saying to myself, are they covering this story because it's a black child missing and they feel a sense of obligation because of the squawk that's been raised, rightfully so? Or are they covering this story because of the sense of sensationalism that this woman has already been accused and served jail time for previous abuse and they're putting her on trial in the media? I'm just sitting here looking at it and having these wonderings, if you will. And I think there's some of both of that involved.
Well, based on what you're telling me, it sounds like it is. And you'll never be sure because, of course, the media is not going to come out and tell you, you know, that they're sensationalizing this story based on the fact that the mother's in jail or the fact that, no, they really haven't covered the missing black child like they've covered someone else. So, you know, you'll unfortunately just have to sit and continue to wonder.
Exactly. But it has been proven, I think, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that minorities get less coverage than white folks.
Well, it is. That is true. And partly due to the fact that, as I said before, you know, very few newsrooms in this country have black news managers who really can be more sensitive to the stories that would be of interest. Because I am a firm believer, Pete, that, you know, stories that affect you can also affect me.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be about race, because you know what? As many, even though the numbers for unemployment are extremely high in the African-American community, there are also white people who are unemployed. So that's a story that affects all of us. It's not, you know, race-specific. There are stories about, you know, women, you know, as caregivers. And, yes, the overwhelming majority of women are caregivers in this country, but men do it too. So it's not to just say that, okay, let's just focus on this one group because, you know, they represent the majority. They may represent the majority, but in essence, it can affect all of us. And that's, you know, where I think having a lack of female managers, black managers, Latino managers. I mean, you know, the Hispanic community gets less coverage than anybody, just because, you know, first of all, there's a language barrier, and if you don't have any journalists in your news operation that can speak Spanish, then you've lost an entire, you know, population. And if you've lost the population, you're not going to bother to cater them to them anyway. So there are a lot of things that I think that are lacking in newsrooms today, and I'm speaking more on a local level, because on a national level, I do believe that national journalists do a better job in trying to make sure they cover, you know, the entire population. But on
right.
a local level, we still have those issues that we have to deal with.
In this marketplace, in the Phoenix marketplace, I am familiar with a few of the Hispanic journalists, news anchors, and reporters. One reason is that Deborah's has been in a group that one of them was the head of a particular ladies group, and she's an Hispanic, and she's big in the Hispanic community, and she writes for Hispanic magazine. And she is there's absolutely no doubt that she has Hispanic roots, and everybody knows her to have Hispanic roots because she is proud of her heritage.
Awesome.
And she was mentored by a lady that's now in Los Angeles, Linda Alvarez, was the mentor for this local newscaster here. And there are a series of reporters, many reporters, that have Hispanic surnames that are reporting, that are the street reporters, and doing wonderful, wonderful work. But there are no blacks in Phoenix doing the same thing that I can recall,
wow.
that I know of.
Wow.
There's one weekend anchor, very good, very, very good, and one sportscaster, male sportscaster, that are black. And I think, and I could be wrong, but I believe they're probably the only two. There may be one or two others that I'm not aware of, but those are the two that are most visible.
And here's
because
the other
they have
thing.
Regular shows.
Well, here's the other thing, Pete. This is a misnomer. People think that the folks they see coming into their living room night after night after night are the ones that are really in control. They are just the glamour. Well, maybe not all of them look that good, but they are just the pretty faces who read you the news. The real power in the news comes from those people you never see, the news director, the assistant news director, the producers, the assignment editors. So depending on who those people are, they are the ones who really help shape the news you're going to see. And depending on what they look like, how old they are, and Pete, don't get me started about the lack of coverage about boomers in this country. Oh, my God. I mean, it's like, you know, we are 78, 80 million strong, and all we get is a little I joke with my friends, all we get is that little retrospective TV where we have to go back down memory lane in order to remember who we are. I mean, how do you not cover stories that are of importance to us?
Well, Beverly, I'm going to get you started, my darling. we're going to get into it. it begins now. I have my own belief that once, and I don't think it's a belief, I think it's a fact, once you get to be 40 years old, you are a has-been in the news industry, and you are in this, and also in many cases, you are a has-been in industry, period. You know, they start looking at you when you're 40, 45, and they start thinking about shipping you out and getting 220s. It's that old story about the man that says, my wife turned 25, or my wife turned 50, I'm going to trade her in for 225s.
I mean, I haven't heard that, but that's really good.
but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. I mean, somebody turns 55, 60 years old, and all of a sudden they have to bid for their job because they end up being a contractor, and they got to bid for their own job back. And then what happens is when the 225s or the 230s can't get it done, they got to rehire the guy back, and then now there's all kinds of animosity because he's the one calling the shots with the 30-year-olds, and they don't like it anymore.
Right, exactly.
But they couldn't do it themselves.
I have actually written about that very subject in my first book called Whatever, A Baby Boomer's Journey into Middle Age, where I the title of that chapter is Yes, You're My Boss, But I'm Old Enough to Be Your Mother. And I talk about, you know, being an older employee in an industry where youth and beauty reign. I mean, you know, say what you want about journalists being, you know, experts and all of this, but there's still a glamorous side to it, and no one really wants to sit and look at someone that's unattractive on the air or someone that's really old on the air. Now, in our local market, we do have a couple of journalists who have, I'll call them seasoned, who've been around for a number of years.
That's a nice term. I like that term. I'm seasoned. That's good.
Yeah, seasoned, yes. Who've been around for many, many years. And, you know, they've become like the Walter Cronkites of, you know, the day, you know, because he was the most trusted newsman in America. And so they've kind of gotten that bill. But here's the thing, Pete. You're not going to find any old women doing the news. If they're past 50, and definitely not 60, you're not going to find them. So, you know, the business does discriminate against older folks, generally speaking, they do. And they push you out, or they, you know, give you something else to do, or they force you into a situation where you just say, okay, I just give up. I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Yeah, there was a woman in San Diego. She was on one of the major affiliate stations, and her name is Laura Buxton, and she was just beloved. She was. Everybody saw her go through her weight gains and her weight losses, and she didn't make an issue. I mean, she wasn't Oprah make an issue of it kind of a person. But I mean, it was visible. It could be seen. And she aged on the air, and eventually she was let go by the affiliate. But she but she landed with a local station, and prolonged her career tremendously. And everybody loved Laura. Everybody thought she was great. She was community involved, and she was just out there all the time, and people just thought she was great. And she left the newsroom because her husband that she had met, her new husband, was going to run for city council, and she felt that she would have a conflict of interest covering it.
Right, right.
So she left the newsroom, and she's doing things independently on her own now, as I understand it, in Southern California. But she is one of the few women that I think was probably approaching 50 and was still on air in a very active role as a 5 o'clock and a 10 o'clock anchor. Really amazing that she was that she hung around as long as she did. But she was an icon. She was an institution in San Diego, and I think that's partly the reason that she was there so long.
And I think I recall when I was working in the Boston market, there was a woman there, Sarah Ann Shaw, who she could have easily been somebody's mother, grandmother. And she had been there for years and years and years. And just like this woman you're talking about, she was like an icon there. But those women are few and far between.
Yes, they are. Yes,
you
they
know,
are.
Because the way, we gain weight when we get older, and, then we don't look as attractive. And so some man somewhere who's making a decision looks at that and says, that's not pleasing to our viewers. Not really knowing what our viewers want, but just makes that decision that woman would no longer be attractive to our viewing audience.
Doesn't fit the demo. Yeah, it doesn't fit the demo.
Exactly.
Doesn't fit the demographic. Talk to me a little bit more about some of your observations with regard to how the baby boomer generation is being treated or mistreated or stood or understood or whatever the case might be. What are some of Beverly's observations?
Well, how long you got? No, seriously.
I put it up for 90 minutes. You want to go 90 minutes? We'll go 90
no,
minutes.
No. Can't go 90 minutes. But well, here's the thing. From a media perspective, I just don't think that all of our stories are being told. And here's the other thing, and I don't want to keep harping on the race part of this, but the thing of it is that when Tom Brokaw, do you remember when Tom did his piece on the boomer generation?
It was absolutely horrible.
It was the worst. It was the absolute worst. And I actually wrote him and told him I thought it was horrible.
It was terrible.
Yeah, and I was so surprised because he is a part of the generation. And I just thought he would have more editorial control. And if he did have editorial control, that said to me that he really just missed the mark. So I just think all of our stories aren't being told because, not everyone's a World War II hero. Not everyone, Vietnam, World War, there are some other things about the boomer generation. A lot of African Americans in our generation don't identify themselves as baby boomers because every time you hear about baby boomers, that image does not look like us. So, I'm kind of like jumping on the bandwagon and I'm saying, hey, but we're out here too. So mm-hmm. You can't ignore us because we're here and I don't know what the numbers are, but, there's a lot of us out here. As far as the media attention that we seem to be getting online, it's really a lot of negative stuff. Everybody's blaming the boomers for the mess we're in. And, I don't know. The jury's kind of out on that one. I mean, as far as how much blame we should get. But, they're really negative.
Well,
go ahead.
I'll say this about now. I agree. I have to admit that I have looked at our situation in this country politically and some of the weird stuff that's happening, and I'm saying these guys are baby boomers. But I will say this: there are 78 million of us, and we are equal opportunity idiots. I mean, any one of us could be an idiot, just like any one of any other generation could be an idiot. So don't castigate the whole group by the idiocy of a few. And that's a universal message. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know?
But here's the thing. Those few in our generation really did make us all look bad. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, look at all of the, you know, all of the greed on Wall Street didn't come from the millennials. It didn't come from Generation Y. It came from the boomers and the post-boomers. Look at all the CEOs that you know, some of them went to jail over the biggest scandals financial scandals that rocked this nation. They were boomers.
That's right.
So did some of us really did get greedy, and some of us believe that, you know, it was really all about us and screw everybody else. And I do believe that, you know, we have to own up to some of that. I mean, we can't just ignore it and say, no, it didn't happen, because it did.
Right, right. Well, you know, those critics that would point that out have the facts on their side, because there's no doubt about it that we did indeed do, I say we, but those that did are.
I didn't do it, Pete.
I know, but chances are good. Chances are good. In this generation, with the people that are in control and in power now, chances are good that they may well be a boomer.
Yes.
That's just the way it is. That's just math. That's math numbers.
So what we need to do now, in my opinion, is we need to turn our image around, and we need to present ourselves in a manner to further this country along. And there are things I think that we can do. I mean, you know, I think that our generation has probably been one of the most charitable generations. A lot of charities grew under the boomer generation. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that we can work on creating a more positive image for ourselves as we move into our twilight years.
Well,
but, you know,
interesting. Interesting. I don't mean to talk over you, but you say these things, and it brings to point something that I've had other guests on my show that have discussed, and we've been around these same things. And when you say create our own positive image, and that is a boomer trait, that if we've been let go from employment somewhere and then we're going to go and interview for another job somewhere, we have, for some strange reason, I don't know why, but we have this, I'm going to say, almost inferiority complex, because we've been told so much and said so many things about the boomer generation in a negative way that we start to believe in ourselves. And there are people that I've had on this show that their whole business is for the boomer to get his head or her head on straight and go out and have that conversation with that prospective employer from the standpoint of strength rather than weakness. It's unbelievable. And these people claim to have some real success there. So I think you're right. I think there's an essence of that we have to correct our own shortcomings as regards how we think about ourselves.
And here's the other thing, and I'm so glad you mentioned that. That's a nice segue into my book.
Well, then let's go for that, Beverly. Now's the time.
So many of us now, you know, for whatever reason, are either leaving corporate America voluntarily or being forced out. And as a result, we're not old enough to retire yet. So we are having to reinvent and recreate who we are under some new whatever we choose to do. And when we're doing that, we are going to have to force ourselves to reinvent in a more positive way so that people will want to purchase our products or, you know, purchase our services, whatever it is, whatever the business it is that we have. And so in my new book, How to Get on the News Without Committing Murder, I talk about those things that we need to do in order to show a more positive image of ourselves at midlife so that the media will want to take an interest in us and really tell our stories, show who we are, and get people to know, like, and trust us again.
We, Deborah and I attended, we have something here in Arizona called Local First Arizona. It's all about buying local, shopping local, using local purveyors of goods and services and products so that we can subsidize the state of Arizona, have an effect on our tax base positively, and keep the money in Arizona rather than going out from the owners of the big box stores and so on. Using local banks and trying to use local banks and credit unions so that we can keep those investment dollars here, so we're not helping somebody in Manhattan or wherever it is as far as the big major banks are concerned. And one of the things that they do is they hold these little seminars from time to time. And this, one of the seminars that we went to was put on by a fellow that's on the board of Local First Arizona, and he's a PR agent. He has a PR agency. And he brought in some producers from the local television news shows, and they had a seminar on how to get on the news and how to write your press release and how
right.
to make contacts with those producers that were sitting up on the dais. And the common thing that was said with regard to that is that you need to have a hook, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, you've got to do the work for them because they're lazy and plus they're inundated with people that want to get on.
That's
so what
true.
You've got to do is you've got to lay out the whole story. And one of the things that they were saying, you had to say three ways to make sure that you have excellent sex. And that's going to catch their eye, and then they're going to say, well, tell me about this story, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
You need to have that hook. Go ahead.
I actually talk about that as one of my tips is how to write a dynamic press release, because as a journalist in a newsroom, I threw away a lot of press releases over my career because people just don't know how to write them. And what you said about three excellent ways to have sex, that would immediately catch my eye. And it
sure.
would make me want to read more. And so I talk about how to get those attention-grabbing headlines and how to say what you need to say in the first couple of sentences, because if you don't say it there and you wait until the end, they're not going to waste their time trying to read to the end of your release. So, yeah, so that what you saw and, you know, that seminar you went to is right on the money, because producers and journalists don't have a lot of time to waste. They want you to do the homework. They want you to really hand-deliver them the story. And all
right.
they have to do, all they have to do is just, you know, tell you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because when we're doing our shows and people send things to us, I use Harrow, help a reporter out, and I'll post that I'm looking for guests in these areas or whatever. And those people know how to do it, because they will send a complete synopsis of everything that they are expert in, or whatever the case might be, and it'll be all there in front of me. It does make my job a lot easier, and it gives me the opportunity to take a look at many of them rather than just one or two, and I can weigh them and look at them and spend some time with them and then go ahead and make my follow-up contact. And it's one thing, though, isn't it, to write something for to be noticed by a producer, TV or radio, and for a newspaper. Because as a journalist in a newspaper, it's a little bit different. You want to make sure that, again, your prevalent points are near the top, because if they start cutting because they physically need the space in the paper, they will cut from the bottom up. And if you're going to have your hard point, it's going to be at the bottom. It's going to be gone.
Well, here's the thing about the difference between broadcast and print. In print, you can say so much more because the newspaper really isn't limited like, you know, your a minute and 30 seconds on TV. You know, a minute and 30 seconds is really not that long. It's a couple of sound bites and some video. And unless you get an opportunity to appear on a show like The Boomer and the Babe, you really aren't getting a whole lot of time to say what you have to say. So I think that, you know, it's always, and I loved being interviewed by print journalists just because I know that a lot of that I say, if I'm the feature, a lot of what I say they're going to use. If I'm being interviewed by a television journalist, a lot of what I say is going to be edited. And there's the danger, because when a TV journalist gets your story and they start editing, that may totally change what you've said, depending on how they choose to tell the story.
That's right. So in many cases, you're better off making sure that you, as much as you can, because you can easily get bumped. But if it's at all possible, you want to try to set yourself up for a live spot.
Yes. Yes. That way, what can they do, right?
That's right.
That's true.
I mean, you give them the power of cutting tape. You could end up, the best stuff could be on the floor. That's how that goes. And they can shape it to be whatever slant they want it to be. I remember years ago when my daughter was working for an operation over in San Diego, and she was the interior designer, and she was talking about, they wanted her to talk about these new facilities that they had for boomers that were retirement, but I mean it was high end stuff. I mean it wasn't a question of whether or not you were going to have marble and granite. It was a question of what grade of marble and granite were you going to have.
And okay.
We're talking about 3,500 square foot condominiums, you know, in La Jolla, overlooking the ocean, kind of a stuff. And she was their design manager. So anyhow, they came by, and she went down to the studio, and she had never done this before. She had never been prepped. And she was down there, and I watched it on TV, and I was just hurting for her, because this guy was firing crap at her so fast that she didn't even have a chance to give her name before she was off to something else. He was off to something else, and she's a tiny little person, and this guy was 20 feet tall, and they couldn't get both of their heads in the same camera shot. It was such a freaking disaster, and she said, Daddy, she said, I will never do that again. I mean, she wasn't their public spokesperson, but they nominated her to be the one, the powers that be, and she went down there, and it was boy, she was personally, she felt embarrassed, because she felt as though she wasn't given the opportunity to make her information known. So it can be tough. Those live ones can be tough. So there's advantages to both, isn't there?
Yes.
Live and tape.
Yeah, there's advantages to both. You know, even with a live shot, you know, you only have so much time, and you've got a producer yelling in your ear. If you're the reporter on the scene, you know, trying to interview somebody, you've got a producer yelling in your ear, and you don't know all the things that are going on behind the scenes, and so they're trying to wrap you up, and you've got a list of questions in your head that you want to ask, and then, you know, then you hear a response that, you know, the person gives you, and then you ask a follow-up question to that, and by the time you're done, it's over. So, I prefer print, but as a reporter, I really tried to talk to the subject about what they wanted emphasized, so that when I went back to the editorial meeting, that's what I could present. I wouldn't just give them all the facts. I'd just say, well, you know, this is what we talked about. This is what they said is relevant. And then that's how I try to tell that story. Because, as I said earlier, when you have so much information, I mean, it's you can take that story and turn it in any direction that you want to. If I'm a let me give you an example. Okay, I'm a baby boomer. I'm an African American baby boomer. I'm a baby boomer over 50. I'm a wife, a mother, a grandmother. Okay? Now, you got 6 different areas that you could talk about. So if we're doing an interview, you're interviewing me, and I'm telling you, yeah, I'm a mother, yeah, I'm a wife, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. When you get back to the newsroom, then you're going to sit down and say, okay, which one was the best? Was it what she said about being a mother, what she said about being a grandmother, that she's a baby boomer over 50? What was it? And then you're going to make a decision. Now, I may be sitting home thinking, oh, what I said about being a grandmother, that's me. And then when I see it on the news, you said, well, you know, she talked about being a baby boomer over 50. So you see, I mean, it's like when the journalist can just pick and choose what they want, and it does become subjective.
So sometimes I have too much information.
That's right. Sometimes we give them too much. And that's what I say. You give them just enough so that your story, what you really want them to know, will come out in the story. Give them the facts, but give them the facts the way you want them told.
By the time she got past the fact that you're a wife, you're a mother, you're a black woman who's a baby boomer that has grandparents or grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
By the time she gets to that whole thing, and her story may have been on grandparenting.
Right.
She has got way too much. It's TMI.
Right.
Too much information.
That's right.
I mean, and she as the reporter, though, it seems to me, Beverly, needs to discern and needs to know going in what her story is going to be. And that's where it comes down to you helping to prep her or the producer by the way you present your hook. Am
exactly. I correct? Exactly. Find the hook and give it to them. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You're exactly right. And I do. I talk about that in my book just because I think that, you know, this is the challenge that many of us as baby boomers face when we are seeking media coverage at this age is that we've probably been in corporate America for a good portion of our lives and not been exposed to the media, so we don't really know how the game is played. And then we get older, and, you know, we kind of have our own way of doing things as older folks, and we don't understand that, you know, that young journalist does not care about your Employee of the Year Award from 1975. They don't care that, you know, you way back when did this. They want to know about the here and now. So they're not impressed with your resume. They want to know your expertise and how that expertise matters, is relevant to the story they're trying to tell. That's what they want to know. And so we, as boomers and beyond, have to figure out how do we present our best image so that we can get the kind of coverage we want, the positive coverage, and come across as not looking like some old fuddy-duddy or, you know, somebody that's just not with it. So those are the things I talk about in the book.
Now, also, let me ask you this. Do you recommend that people solicit, for lack of a better word, but send their hook to and send their press release to particular producers for particular days of the week, or particularly maybe the morning shows on the weekend for the local stations because they have more time to play with?
Well, I'm always a big let me put it this way. If you can schedule something on the weekend, that's probably the best time because you're right. There's a lot of time on the weekends that journalists are looking to cover. But I don't believe in what I call the spray and pray. I don't believe that you should just send your information out to every journalist everywhere. I do believe that you should target who's, you know, which journalist you feel can best tell your story, whatever it is. You know, there may be two or three, there may be four or five, but when you start trying to send it to 20 and 30 journalists, I think that it loses its luster. So, you know, if you like, Cooper, Anderson Cooper, for example, and you want to get your story to him, then, you know, you keep doing that. But I don't, and locally now, it's a little different story, because I think that the local stations all compete for the news. So it does not hurt you to send your information to each journalist. Now, days of the week, Pete, there is no such thing as sending it for this particular day unless you're having an event. If your event is on a Wednesday, then, yeah, you need to make sure that it's targeted for a Wednesday. But if you're just sending out some generic, you know, information about something that you think is relevant and you just like to do a story on it, it doesn't matter what day of the week. Weekends work better because they need more news on the weekends, but any day of the week would be fine.
That was one thing that I was mentioning, the fellow that held that little seminar, that he was saying that there are certain, in our market, he was referring to only to our market, he said there are certain shows that you have a better chance of getting on because they have a longer period of broadcast and they are in more need of local stories because that's what they do on their weekend show. It's a show about local stuff on weekends, and they devote a little bit more time to it.
Well, you have to do your homework, and you have to know which shows will really be the best ones for you. In our local market, I think the CBS affiliate here probably gives more local coverage. Well, no, that's not true. Let's say I think NBC and CBS give more local coverage than the ABC affiliate, but you got to do your homework and you got to know. You can't just blindly and then the other thing too is that you have to follow up. Once you send your information out there, don't just think that they just got it and they're just coming to interview you. You have to call them. You have to say, hey,
yes,
you know, I sent you a press release. I'm just following up to see if you've got it. Is this something that you'd be interested in? And try to get them to say, you know what, yes, if we can make it, we'll definitely be there. Because they may not get it. You may fax it and somebody may have thrown it away.
And not only that, but isn't the converse true as well? And that is that you don't hear anything, and all of a sudden, boom, they call you, say, can you get down here and be down here in the next hour because we're going to do something.
That's right. Say, no, I can't. I need to reschedule.
Oh. Yeah, no, because then you will never get that second chance.
You'll never get it again.
Yeah, it's opportunity knocks once.
I can't tell you the number of times I've, you know, called people on the phone and just go down the list until you get somebody. And then and then those people that weren't there, they were like, well, you know, I thought you were going to call me. Well, I did, but you know what? You didn't respond.
Yeah.
You got to be ready to respond.
There's something that just that I see that is very prevalent, and I've seen it in most stations, most networks, most communities, wherever I happen to have been traveling when I watch the news. And if there is an accident, okay, an automobile accident, a pedestrian accident, a pedestrian car accident, or whatever, especially if it happens to unfortunately involve a child, they always show the police tape and they show the lone shoe in the road. And it's to dramatize the effect of this accident, obviously. But
yes.
They should have a camera shot of the shoe. No foot in it, just the shoe, because this poor soul was knocked off of their shoes by the impact of the accident. And I had occasion one time to ask a news reporter, why is it that seems to be a standard shot in any market with any local news, that is a standard shot, the standard shoe shot? And Deborah and I will sit there and we'll watch and we'll listen to the story and we'll say, here comes the shoe shot, and boom, there it is.
Well, what
there
did the reporter tell you? I'm curious. What did he say or she say?
Because we can't show the body.
Okay.
That's what she said. She says, well, we can't show the body.
Well, I thought she would have said, something different, but, yeah, that's true, too. I thought she might have said, because that shoe, wherever it is, really shows the impact of that accident. I mean,
yes,
if you look at
yes.
it from a human perspective, you know, saying because we can't show the body, I mean, there are news stations that do show bodies, okay, so
yes.
from a
yes.
distance, but they show them. But
yeah.
just showing that one shoe out in the road really does show the impact of what happened there. And that alone, without any words, can tell a story. So
that's the drama shot.
Yeah, that's the drama and the trauma shot.
I mean, it covers both of them.
Exactly.
Well, there's a couple of stations. All of our major, our three or four network stations, counting Fox is a network, which I sometimes don't like to do. But
oh, come on now, our Fox station isn't that bad.
I must be talking about the national Fox.
Yeah, you have to be. Okay.
But at any rate. I lost my own train of thought. What I was going to say is our PR expert that was talking to us had a little something to say about every station and what their emphasis is. And station A was having to do with social activities. Station B might have to do with personal activities, and so C might be doing something else. But station number D, his comment was, if it bleeds, it leads.
Oh yeah, oh yes, and that is a standard in the newsrooms. That's interesting because I actually have that exact quote in my book. But that is a standard that's been in this country for many, many years. News managers believe that the gorier the better, and that's what America wants. And, Pete, here's the problem. And I said this earlier, but let me just elaborate a little more. You have managers who sit in a newsroom determining what they believe we as viewers want. So how do they know? How do they know that we want to know? Unless it's something that's just so overwhelming, how do they know that we want to know that three people were gunned down on some street that we never drive down or some remote area? You know, people we don't. I mean, how do they know this? And what are they, you know, basing this on? Because if it bleeds, it leads. And that's what they honestly believe. But now that I'm not in, you know, corporate America's part of journalism, I believe that if we started out telling some good stories about the good things, we do it during the holiday season, we tell wonderful, warm, heartwarming stories, you know, about the good things people are doing, why can't we just tell them all year long?
At least sprinkle some of them in there.
Yeah, why can't we just do that? But everything we tend to hear and see is about the goriness of the world we live in, and I just think that, you know, it's a mindset, but once again, when you have people in the, you know, sending and making decisions, for us, this is what they really believe that we want to see.
Well, and I would venture to say that they're probably, in some cases, unfortunately, they're right. I think there's a certain element of that, and we just, as you know, not that long ago, we just had the congresswoman down in Tucson that was shot by that deranged soul and killed how many people it was. And there was this big national thing with she and her husband, the astronaut, were on, what was her
name? I think it was Diane Sawyer.
Diane Sawyer, yes, correct.
Yes.
But whenever they're talking about an update of Gabrielle Giffords on the local stations that she's made this progress or she's going to be appearing here or she's going to make this trip back to Houston for more therapy or whatever the case might be, they have to reset the story. And one of the things that they always reset the story with is the file film of her being wheeled out on the gurney into the ambulance.
Oh, well, we did not see that footage. I don't recall seeing that footage, but that's because you're in Arizona.
Right, right. But all I'm saying is that's the standard Gabby Giffords shot, is that her assistants, that heavyset Hispanic man, that they made a big deal of him, the fact that he was also homosexual, was her right-hand, relatively new, but right-hand man as far as an assistant was concerned, and they credit him with helping save her life because he tried to keep her alert and he tried to keep her motivated while this whole thing was going on. And they're walking out and they're hustling her into the ambulance and he's there by her side. And that is the standard shot. And you can't see a Gabby Giffords story, at least locally, without seeing that shot and having her wheeled in the ambulance.
I think the reason that that's done, Pete, is because they are assuming that somebody new who doesn't know the story might want to know the backstory.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, I know you know you know the story. Deborah knows the story, but there might be some people new who don't know.
Well, that's the Gabby Giffords saga equivalent of the shoe shot.
Exactly.
In my way of thinking.
Exactly.
And as a matter of fact, I don't think she had any shoes on in that shot, but maybe it's just because they had her legs covered. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just such a cynic sometimes.
Yes, you are.
But I enjoy it. I have fun doing it, you know.
but you know what? Being a cynic is not a bad thing all the time.
Right.
I think that it because being a cynic should raise a level of awareness to what the person is saying.
Mm-hmm.
It may open your ears to something new that you might not have thought of before.
Yes.
Well, it's not always a bad thing.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I'm going to leave you this because we're coming down to the end of our time here. And yesterday we have a show that we do twice a month. It's called Exploring Faith. And it's done with myself and Father John Mayer, who is the priest of one of the local Episcopal churches. And he is responsible for bringing the guests to our show, and it is just that, exploring faith, and he brings some wonderful guests to our show. And yesterday we had a guest on the show that was talking about the religious institutions and how he's trying to help them deal with people that have special needs. And he got involved because his grandson, who is 21 years old, is autistic, and particularly autistic children, but all autistic people, but all people with needs. special needs. And John's church, to him, much to his credit, is involved with doing services for these people who wouldn't be accepted and wouldn't be able to take sacrament, they wouldn't be able to take baptism and so on because of their personality proclivities. They would be shunned by the church and would not be allowed to take part in any of those ceremonies because of some possible outcry that might happen or the utterance that they may make. Because they can't sit still in many cases. You know, they don't pay attention and, you know, they have these deficiencies. And the discussion went along those lines, and he was saying, thanking John for the fact that his church was doing it. And then he read a little verse, and I don't recall which one it was. It was a very short verse, and it was from the Bible. And he read this verse about people coming to the table and the table being set for everybody. At the church should be setting the table for everybody. And it was that type of a thing, you know, bring all your children kind of a thing, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, I said, Robert, I said, I've got a verse from the book of Pete. And he says, oh. And John looks at me and goes, oh, no, what is he going to say? And I said, put your money where your mouth is.
Okay.
If you say you're going to do it, if this is what you preach, then dagnabbit, do it.
That's
don't
true.
Just don't give it lip service.
That's true.
And I think that applies with many, many things that are going on in boomerdom, in the news business. I mean, if you say you're going to be fair and balanced, then damn it, be fair and balanced. If you say you're going to report nothing but the facts, then report nothing but the facts. And don't get into your editing being your editorial statement. Yeah, you see where I'm going here? You see my cynicism here? Can you feel me, Beverly?
I feel you, Pete. I feel you. I do.
I mean, it just drives me nuts. It really does. And the older I get, the nutsier I get. Well, Beverly, I want to thank you for being on the show with me today. I tell you, I have had an absolute enjoyable little over an hour talking to you. You've been just a pleasure to talk to.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
And I really enjoy it. Tell us about a little bit about the book. How can I get on the news without committing murder? I understand that is a forthcoming book going to be released in January. Is that correct?
Yes, in January 2012. It will be available on Amazon.com as well as Kindle and on my website. So, as a matter of fact, I'm doing pre-orders right now. So if you go to BeverlyMahone.com, you can pre-order your copy at a very special rate of $14, because after that it's going to go up to the regular price of $19.95. So it's a great book, and, you know, it's from a journalist who's been there, done that, and now I've written the book about it. So just helping you to shape your image so that you will be attractive to the media, and then they'll want to cover your story. People like you, Pete.
There you go.
See? Yeah, people like you. See, once they read my book, then they can contact you, and the rest is history.
it'll be history, all right.
Well, thank you so much again. I have really, truly enjoyed this interview.
Thank you very much for being here. I've enjoyed it as well. So have a great holiday season, and the heck with holiday season, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. How's that?
That's wonderful. And it's the same to you. And tell Deborah I hope she gets well real soon.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure talking to you. Take care now.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you conversation and information with Ms. Beverly Mahone, journalist, speaker, and author. Her new forthcoming book coming out in January of this year, of this 2012, I'm sorry, How to Get on the News Without Committing Murder. As you can imagine, if you listen to this conversation today or if you catch it later on the archives, tell your friends about it. It certainly must be a good book. Beverly is just quite a lady to talk to and has a lot of good information in her years and her experience that she's gained working in the industry. You can listen to the Boomer and the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do much more than host this radio program on Blog Talk. Check us out at boomerandthebabe.com. That's boomerandthebabe.com. See everything else that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Tomorrow we will have a gentleman by the name of Cameron Svensson. Cameron Svensson is with Hospice of Arizona. We'll be talking about hospice and how hospice can aid the dying as well as the families of those that are loved ones that are going to be leaving them shortly due to illness or whatever the case may be. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Have a great afternoon, everybody, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Hope you can join us then. Have a great day.
Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as PeteFeeders47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.